another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I don't know if I've ever sounded so excited. This is a very special episode, and I can barely stay in my seat. I can't wait to talk with somebody special that we have on the show today. It's going to be a spotlight on one of my favorite comic book characters of all time. If you've listened to this show at all, you know what a huge Rom Space Knight fan I am. If you're not familiar with Rom, I don't know what you're doing listening to this podcast, because I talk about him all the time. But if you're not familiar, I'm going to play the TV commercial from back in the 70s. So you're going to learn a lot right now. Pay attention.
Far, far away, in another galaxy, the Knights of the Soul Star Order, defenders of justice and truth, have been ambushed by the evil magicians, the Dire Wraiths. The Soul Star Order has prevailed and are now seeking out their scattered enemies. One of these knights has followed the trail of the Dire Wraiths all the way to Earth. This one the Dire Wraiths fear more than all others. This one has hounded them and kept them underground for centuries. This one alone could wipe them off the face of creation. He is Rom, Lord of the Soul Star Order. Rom the Wraith Slayer. Rom the Space Knight. Even he must be careful. The Dire Wraiths can assume any form they wish. Rom counters this with the energy analyzer. With it, he can see through appearances and determine the true essence of any being. Rom also has a weapon unique to his order, the Neutralizer, which can disorganize any molecular structure. He has rocket pods, which can instantly send him soaring. He has a translator through which he can communicate with any intelligent being in the universe. And his respirator allows him to breathe in any atmosphere. Rom, Lord of the Soul Star Order. Rom the Wraith Slayer. Rom the Space Knight. The microelectronic creation from Parker Brothers.
Wow, that's so cool. So yeah, Rom was originally a toy released in 1979 by Parker Brothers. It became a comic. Parker Brothers licensed Rom out to Marvel Comics. The incredible Bill Mantlo created this huge, rich world. And because it was a licensed property, and Marvel no longer has a license and hasn't had it for a long time, Rom has been absent from the pages of comics for a long time, which is a very sad thing for people like me who grew up with Rom and love Rom. But my guest today is going to be changing that. So it's my pleasure to welcome Chris Ryle to the show. Chris, thanks for joining me, man. You must be as excited as I am to have Rom return to the pages of comics.
I am. And first of all, it's good to be here. And yeah, it's funny. I'm excited all over again after hearing that full audio of the commercial. I haven't listened to that all the way through in a long time. So it's pretty fun how lofty they make it sound, how important.
Yeah, I mean, even just the original idea that the Parker Brothers came up with at the time, you know, 1979 was almost ahead of its time in terms of being a lofty, noble, regal, a science fiction, a space opera.
It feels like it would have fit in nicely as a science fiction version of John Borman's Excalibur movie, especially with that English accent on the voiceover.
Yeah, exactly. So, Chris, for those of our listeners that aren't familiar with your work, why don't you give us a quick synopsis, what you're all about, what you do over there at IDW?
Yeah, so it's funny. I actually just celebrated my 12th anniversary this week of being IDW's editor-in-chief. And I've also, for about the last 6-7 years, been our chief creative officer as well, which essentially both boil down to overseeing all the publishing here. And then in my spare time, such as it is, I've written a bunch of comics for us, like co-created things like Zombies vs. Robots and Onyx and Groom Lake and a handful of other titles.
Yeah, I loved Onyx, by the way. That was a great series.
That was our way to do a thing that we thought we would never get to do, which is, you know, I've been talking about Rom since I joined IDW, or probably long before that, but been looking into the publishing rights to it ever since we got in business with Hasbro in 2005. So after about nearly 10 years of asking and pleading and looking and hoping, I sort of reached a point where I go, well, all right, this is never going to happen. Maybe we should just kind of make a similar thing ourselves. And so Gabriel Rodriguez and I, the artist on it, came up with Onyx. We launched Onyx, and right as the first issue's coming out last summer, we get a word from Hasbro that, hey, you guys can now do ROM. We want to announce it at Comic-Con, and let's move on this. So we go, man, the timing about these things is very funny.
Yeah, I remember the first day of Comic-Con last year asking you about it. You're like, no. And then a couple days later, yeah. It's really cool. Can you speak at all about why was Hasbro reluctant? Why did it take so long? Was there a particular reason, or did they not feel like the timing was right?
No, it's more of there's always contractual stuff involved. There's always legal things involved in any license, and especially on something that they not only acquired from, it was originally created by a guy named Big McCoy for Parker Brothers. He sold it to Parker Brothers. Parker Brothers went away. Hasbro got the rights to it, but then Marvel had done the comic, after the toy, and so they created a lot of backstory and other characters to it. So it was all just a matter of ascertaining, actual rights, who owned what. Paperwork in the 80s was never quite what it is now. Lawyers didn't paper things the same way, right, to the same degree of accuracy. So it just took a lot of digging to really make sure who owned what and what could be done. And so finally, after a long time, we finally broke it loose. I mean, and part of it too is Hasbro has just had, they've had other bigger initiatives for a long time. G.I. Joe, Transformers, My Little Pony. Those are the things that have been their breakout entertainment properties. But so, as you start getting deeper into it, like with Marvel going, from the Avengers to things like Doctor Strange and Deadpool, Hasbro starts looking at other things that they own that could then potentially be, turned back into new toys, new movies, new, whatever else. And ROM and the Micronauts certainly fit into that area nicely for them.
Yeah, I was wondering if that might have a little bit to do with it. I mean, at the end of the day, their business, they need to make money to stay afloat. So maybe something like ROM, it's a little more, not necessarily so mainstream. Maybe it just wasn't a priority for them at the time.
It wasn't then, but I certainly think it's going to be, especially with all the movie announcements and the talk of their integrated universe, and now we're doing the same thing in the comics. I think ROM is going to, much like a lot of people have said, man, I can't believe there's a movie where the Vision and Scarlet Witch are actually up on the big screen.
Right.
I think there may come a point, in the not-too-distant future where us big ROM fans can say the same thing. Like, I can't believe there's actually a ROM on the big screen, but all signs point to it,
Dare to dream.
Yeah, totally.
Well, what about you personally, your history with ROM? Do you remember the first, did you start right with issue one, or where did you first encounter ROM?
I did, yeah. And at the time, I was, as a kid, I was fully a Marvel kid at that point. And so I was buying just about everything Marvel put out. And a lot of it, let's be honest, was not the greatest of comics at that time, especially the licensed stuff. So the fact that ROM and Micronauts were both so much better than they should have been, ROM, I think everybody will admit, was kind of a crappy toy, one of the first LED toys, so it had light up eyes and chest and stuff, but he had a big head and sort of overly skinny arms and not much articulation. Like it was the early days of robotic action figures. And so the toy didn't deserve the comic that it got, but Bill Mantlo and Sal Buscema certainly made that comic into something far beyond what the normal licensed comic was at the time. And it always stuck with me. It felt like, kind of an invasion of the body snatchers, a real paranoid science fiction thriller kind of thing, much more than any kind of a tie-in comic. And it just always hit me in my sweet spot. And it's been one of those things that I've constantly thought about and wanted to see come back over the years.
Yeah, same here. Listeners of the show know that, I remember seeing the commercial for the toy. I never had the toy. But then when I started collecting comics, it kind of jogged that memory. It was a toy that I'd always wanted and never got. And yeah, I picked it up, and what blew me away was the characterization.
That backstory you hear about on that that commercial, I mean, they go deep.
Yeah, and also kind of, especially, at the time, I was probably 7 or 8 when I started picking it up. And the theme of him, the kind of the tragic hero that he was, with his lost humanity, the nobility of him sacrificing, that humanity to the greater cause, it, it, it really struck me, you know, that this is an extremely heroic character, you know, kind of in the realm of going back to the classics, you know, very Shakespearean, you know, with the tragedy of it, but still being a hero and willing to make those sacrifices.
Yeah, like I say, it just the comets themselves too had sort of that same weightiness to them. You know, people died and they stayed dead, and it felt like there were real consequences in ways that, you know, your more all agesy superhero comics at the time didn't have.
Right, somebody died in Spider-Man, and you know, you expected him to show back up. You know, especially if it was one of the villains. You know, oh, they crash in the river, and there's a few bubbles, and they're gone. No, they're back. You know, 5-6 issues later.
That was a Hobgoblin, wasn't it?
Yeah, with Rom, I mean, if the race got you, that was it. You didn't.
Yeah, the poor guy. What was his name? The guy with the jetpack.
Torpedo.
The Torpedo. The poor Torpedo, man. The whole town, really.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. That issue 50, 49 and 50 right in there. That was I think 46 or 47 was the first issue I picked up off the stand. So I was just getting into it. You know, and I think maybe I had picked up issue 32 before, but I remember it was 48 where he was almost ready to quit was the first issue where, like, I picked up the issue, I read it, I realized, you know, comics are a monthly thing. I think I was like I said, 7 or 8 at the time. Comics are a monthly thing, and that was the first series where I collected month after month after month. And like I said, I think I had picked up like issue 32 before that, just randomly when I used to just grab issues kind of willy nilly. And that was the one with the mechanical spiders, and I think it was the cover that grabbed me on that one. But yeah, I had just started reading Rom with like 48, and then what happened in 49 and 50 with them taking out the whole town, and I was hooked from that moment. I went back quickly and collected all the previous issues. Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say the same, that it hit you, sounds like the same way it hit me.
Yeah, especially being at that age that I was at, it was really cool. So we've talked about finally getting the rights. So why do the Rom series now the way that it is? Because we talked about how impactful that story was. You don't necessarily have a lot of you don't have access to the background that Bill Mantlo created, because it was work for hire for Marvel. So it's just what's on the box, just kind of what we heard in the commercial, and that's your basis. So why do the series? There's enough there to build off of, you feel?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there's a couple things to it. One is that I'm really sort of happy we don't have that universe, because then it would be way too easy to be the fanish guy who goes, okay, well, now it's time for a hybrid cameo. Now it's time to bring in Starshine and the Terminator again. And now, you know, and so you're sort of doing almost a Bill Mantlo cover album, you know? It's like you're replaying his greatest hits in ways that aren't as good as he did it the first time. And so, plus that Rom, I mean, he effectively had a happy ending until, you know, years later when he didn't. But in the Mantlo series, it came to a resolute ending. He had his happy ending and sort of went off into the sunset back on his planet. So to restart all of that, even without the Marvel Universe elements around, it would have felt really odd to me, because, like, let the poor guy, you know, enjoy the happiness that he earned over those 75 issues. For us, it was, I liked the idea of the box story being, or the commercial story being the, like, that's all we've got. Like, that's the blank canvas we now get to completely fill in different ways. And so it keeps you from falling back on easy fan tendencies. Because, you know, it's sort of like when you see guys that grew up loving Spider-Man and they write Spider-Man, and suddenly it just feels like a Stan Lee homage where they bring it all, like, this is their favorite villain as a kid, so let's use him again. And so we can't do that. And I wouldn't really want to do that. I want to make this thing something that plays to a new audience, and also, you know, hopefully works for the old fans. But I want it to be a thing that people that have heard about Rom from people like me and you over the last, you know, 20 some years, but never seen the comic because it's never been reprinted, they can pick up issue one and go, oh man, this is something cool, without having any knowledge of, or, you know, expectations of what it used to be.
Yeah, nostalgia is a very powerful thing, but I do find that when you go back, sometimes things don't necessarily live up. And now, a few years ago, I went back and reread cover to cover for my YouTube channel every issue. And for me, it still holds up. But there is something to be said for, you know, that's the classic Rom. And yeah, if you guys were to have the license to everything, and you just kind of go in and retread and tell the same stories, then you're not really breaking new ground. And I don't know that it's going to hold up to you know, those feelings that that it evoked in you and I back when we read it. So, yeah, I'm kind of glad too, and because I still love the character, and you know, we just heard that commercial, and you know, it gets me all excited. And so, still using those ideas, still using that basis, I can't wait to see what you come up with. And that's
there's a line in that commercial that didn't even really factor in the comics. So they make a big point about talking about the Soul Star Order. So for a long time, I always thought, well, man, what is the Soul Star Order? I mean, we met the Space Knights and everything, but I don't know. A lot of that stuff, when you reread it now, like you say, it's still great because we read it as kids. But there's bits of it that are kind of that clunky late 70s, early 80s.
Oh yeah,
kinds of touches that you know, it's fun to not be expected to revisit those things now. And you know, and again, just the Mantlo Buscema stuff especially looms so large in my mind that I wouldn't want to do my version of what they did. I want their stuff to just always be what it is and not be messed with. And now we can do a new version, and hopefully it, you know, resonates with some people the way that stuff did with us.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, coming at it from different eras too, I think is really going to help to separate, because that the original ROM series, you know, the four annuals and the 1 through 75, for me, that stands on its own and it should always be there. But it is a little bit a product of its time. You know, I remember, like I said, when I went back and I reread everything, I've forgotten just how wordy comics were back then. You know,
yeah.
Like, I could read a comic now in 5 or 10 minutes. And, you know, some of those issues took me almost 30 minutes. You know, there were so many dialogue boxes and captions and such. And so I think with the way modern comics read now, and of course, better printing processes and packaging, and so visually it just looks better. I think that's going to help separate it as well. And yeah, I'm really, really excited for this series.
Well, awesome, man. I hope it works now, for you, and I hope it works for everybody else who's excited. So the thing of it was, when we got into it, I don't know, I think it's just because, not only as a lifelong reader of comics, I've read a lot of really bad licensed or tie-in comics, but also as a publisher of that stuff, you know, I've tried really hard to treat licensed comics the same way that the big companies treat the properties that they own. Like, our Transformers comics are treated with as much importance to us as Spider-Man is to Marvel or Batman is to DC. So I think we have a pretty good handle on, you know, for the most part, what works for fans, what's going to make a good licensed comic now. So hopefully the lifetime of reading and now, you know, last 12 years of experience in working on these things makes us well equipped to do a thing that isn't just a super fan trying to do their thing. Like, I very much have in mind the original Daredevil movie. You know, Mark Steven Johnson, the director, was a giant Daredevil fan. He loved Frank Miller, and you know, sometimes you can love a thing too much to where you can't separate the fan from the creator. And so, again, starting all from new or from scratch here allows us to not do that, to not get too up in our own heads about paying tribute or even doing cutesy nods throughout the book. I think the best thing we can do to be faithful to the spirit of Bill and Sal is to not have every page or panel be some kind of a jokey tribute to those guys.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up. Because when you think about it, the reason these companies license their properties out is because they want to get more eyes on the property just so they can sell more toys. There's not even really a ROM toy on the market right now. So, you know, scratch that. Hopefully the comic's successful enough that we'll see some ROM toys. I'd love to get my hands on some. But with things like Transformers and My Little Pony, because my 4-year-old daughter is a huge My Little Pony fan, and so, you know, obviously I pick up the comic for her. But like you said, the thing I love about IDW doing these licensed properties is you guys are not necessarily concerned about getting more eyes on these characters to sell more toys. You're just worried about telling good stories. That is the priority, at least from a comic reader and a fan from the outside looking in. That's the way that I look at it. And that, to me, you know, having that focus on telling good stories as the number one priority makes good comics. It makes me want to read these comics. I mean, my daughter loves My Little Pony, but if the stories were crap, you know, I wouldn't hold her interest and I wouldn't bother. You know what I'm saying? And so,
yeah,
so let me thank you for that.
it's funny working with Larry Hama, who's written the G.I. Joe comics in the 80s and is still writing them now. You know, he's been there through all these different versions of publishers doing licensed comics. So back in the day, he'd get a call from the editor who would say, all right, next month Hasbro's putting out, you know, a new Snake Eyes toy. We need a Snake Eyes issue. We need this character in this to sell this comic. Like, comics were like a 20-page advertisement for the new toys. Now, in modern-day toy companies or entertainment companies, they look at things like, all right, if you guys tell good stories, the fans are going to think more positively about the property and the brand and all of that. So we don't need you to serve as a commercial for us. We need you to tell good stories that make us care about those characters. So when those characters show up in animation or toy stores or video games, you know, they're going to follow. So it's been great in that way, just that they understand that comics serve a point that's far beyond just helping them sell toys.
Yeah, in fact, I got a chance to meet Larry at Phoenix Fan Fest in December, and he did a... I took my... the classic reprint, the hardcovers you guys do. I took my volume one over there, gave it to him, and I said, you know, it's a pleasure to meet you. I love your entire run, G.I. Joe at Marvel. I still followed it. You know, I still read G.I. Joe every month from IDW. You know, here's my first issue. I could not possibly... request someone from you. I couldn't tell you what to draw because you're Larry freaking Hama. You draw whatever you want.
So what do you do?
Yeah, he drew an awesome Snake Eyes on the inside cover of that hardcover. So cool. And great creator, really great guy. So
yeah.
Let's talk about some of the creators you're working with on ROM. So you're collaborating on the writing process with Christos Gage.
Yes, who's a guy that for years, like, we would meet up at conventions and just... I don't even know how we both got to know that we were big ROM fanatics, but somehow or other we got to know that we both were big fans. And so we would just talk for years, like, here's what we would do. Man, if we ever got ROM, we should do this. Oh, yeah, we should do this. And, you know, even in his, I forget what series it was that he was writing for Marvel. He actually brought back the character of Hybrid, you know, from the old ROM series. So I knew he was a big fan, and we just got to talking about things we would do, and our ideas really jived. And so I thought, well, going into this, like, I want to do this with people that are equally enthused by ROM. And so he certainly was, and it's been really fun just bouncing ideas off each other. And sort of, you know, that also keeps us in check. So neither one of us is going to get overly fanish and do something that, you know, doesn't make for the best story.
Now, how does the actual writing process work with you two? Are you still using some of those ideas you've talked about over the years? Do you have kind of a long form plot, and then you guys break it down by issue? How does that work?
It's probably, we maybe picked up kernels of that stuff we talked about, but, you know, a lot of that went way too lore heavy because at the time it was always the conversation that we had rights to everything that had already existed.
Okay.
Now it was like I sort of came up with the initial overview of what I wanted it to be. He kicked back some thoughts and ideas that made it stronger, and so we developed this plan. And then, as we were just getting started on that, the whole idea of doing this revolution, the whole Hasbro Universe thing came about, and that sort of accelerated the plans we had. And so we you know, there's a constant rejiggering going on, but essentially it starts with me sending the detailed plot breakdown to him going, you know, here, I think this will work better, let's do this, and then... we just bat it back and forth. I'll take a dialogue pass, then he'll do a dialogue pass. And by the end, we hopefully settle on something really good.
Cool. I find that process to be kind of the almost the norm, I guess, between when writers collaborate. It's that the passing it back and forth, the collaborative process, where someone tweaks something to make it better, and the other person's like, oh, I wish I thought of that. So yeah, I'm glad that you guys work so well together, and I'm hoping to sit down and talk some more ROM with you two at San Diego this year. That would be
cool. Yeah, we'll be there, and David Messina, the artist, is coming in from Italy too, so the whole team will be around.
Oh, that'll be great to sit down with the three of you. Now, was David familiar with ROM?
He was. He'd seen it, but a lot of it... I've worked with David since 2005 when he started working on Angel. And as I do, I talk about ROM to everybody I know.
Right.
until I drive them away, you know. But so David has long known of my affection for ROM, and he's over the years, you know, he gave me a cool ROM as a birthday present a number of years back. And so... when we started talking about it, you know, I knew he could do good science fiction works. He's done a lot of Star Trek, and he's just a guy that I thought has a style that fits somewhere between, again, classic comic book style and then, you know, very modern with especially the coloring techniques. And so I thought he would give us something that, that, you know, moved the look of the comic forward from what it was, but still kept a lot of echoes with what had come before. And then, you know, as we're talking, I said, hey, one thing I'd like to do with the design, because again, we didn't want to do exactly what Marvel did. Marvel did some changes, you know, that made it not exactly like the toy. Things like the feet and other parts were a bit different. So we didn't want to follow their, we didn't want to take what they'd already done. That was more of the Marvel-owned version. And so we started talking about design updates. And I said, you know, I always thought those mitten hands were kind of stupid. Like, I think they made them on the toy because they didn't have the ability to make articulated fingers. You know, it was late 70s toy making. It wasn't as nuanced as it is now. So I said, let's give them actual fingers. That seems like a cool, functional design update that would make a lot of sense to the character and should be a minor thing that won't make anybody crazy. And God, people went crazy.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's just like, really? I mean, because, you know, you look at, like, the change that they've made to Iron Man or to, you know, all these, I mean, Spider-Man's running around in a metal suit now, you know, and so giving Rom fingers felt to me like a small thing, but it really made people crazy, and people started going, well, he obviously doesn't understand Rom at all, and he's obviously not a fan, and man, this really kills my childhood. I go, wow, really? I only wanted him to have fingers so we could recreate that Johnny Cash photo of him flipping people off with those kind of attitudes. No, I mean, it was funny, and I like that they care. Like, that's the important thing, is that people that were upset, like, they're upset because they care, which I love. Like, I love that people are passionate either way. If people were indifferent about it, then you start wondering, you know, if they really care. So I kid about it, but I like that it was a point of contention for a lot of people. But hopefully when they see it, you know, it won't make them too crazy. It's, the changes were as subtle as we could possibly do and still you know, move the design forward a tiny bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, it just kind of makes sense. I mean, you know, here's this advanced civilization that can fuse a person with this incredibly advanced space armor, and they can't separate his fingers. I mean, it doesn't really. And the same thing, I love that you guys incorporated the weaponry actually into the armor. That just makes sense. You know, how many stories were there in the original Rom comic where he kind of got himself in trouble because he got it separated from his weapon, you know, and it was just kind
of... Yeah, or he had to pull it out of subspace.
Right.
Whatever subspace was. And I thought, well, if we're hiding things in subspace, that means it's actually probably where the Micronauts are, and that means his stuff could get stolen. And what, does it just float there? Like, does he have his own little storage locker in subspace? Like, I never quite got that. So, yeah, I like the idea of armor that can sort of flow the weapons out of it, and both those things, honestly, the fingers and the weapons really factor into. I just got done doing a very detailed plot for Rom's full origin, which we probably haven't announced yet, but we're going to tell that in an annual early next year. And so those things really do factor in. So I think people will dig it when they see how it's done or why it's done.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the themes that, some of the broader themes you want to explore. Like, one of the themes in the original Marvel run was that lost humanity. Is that something that's going to factor in, or are you steering away from that?
I mean, his humanity is not stored in a metal suitcase like in the old series, but, you know, the fact that this is a guy who, as we'll see, willingly chose to be trapped inside armor and fight this, you know, never-ending war for the last 200 plus years, you certainly lose some humanity along the way. I mean, we're looking at it from the aspect of, you know, sort of the inhuman aspect of just being a soldier anyway, especially being a soldier for eons and what sort of toll that takes on you. And then it's also a good contrast with the Dire Wraiths, who can literally steal your humanity and become you. So yeah, that, I mean, the loss of, or the sort of supplication of humanity does factor into this in many ways, not in the same way as the old series, but it certainly plays into, you know, who these characters are.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I feel like if that isn't a theme, then it almost, I mean, that theme is so integral to who he is as a character. And I know that a lot of it got fleshed out in the Marvel run, but I just don't know that without you know, even though you're tweaking it, which is cool that you're going to look at it in a new way, I really like to hear you say, it isn't even necessarily that he's trapped in the armor, it's just how much of your humanity you lose because you're fighting a war, and that clearly that's something that kind of resonates, you know, especially when we have soldiers coming home all the time now dealing with things like PTSD and things like that. So I feel like that's relevant, and I always think some of the best comic stories are when we pull things from modern day. You know, our fiction should in some ways reflect reality, and that makes stories worth telling in a way. So I'm glad to hear that. Are there any other themes that you have in mind that you kind of want to explore through telling the story?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, a lot of it does have you know, not heavy-handed, but there are parallels to today's world where the Wraiths are, you know, they're subtle about the way they infiltrate society. And so once it gets to a point where humanity starts finding out that there are these aliens that can steal your identity or replace the neighbor next door, you know, suddenly you have, you know, a version of that classic Twilight Zone episode, or even worse than that, you have with sort of the more, I guess, right-wing paranoia about Muslims and sleeper agents and ISIS infiltrating our society. And so, you know, we're not, like I say, we're not being heavy-handed about that, but that certainly is a thing that people deal with today to whatever degree, whether they're just reading about it or they're actually, you know, believing some of the paranoia that is thrown at them. That was also a thing in the old ROM series, and just the idea of Wraiths being able to replace humans at all is the extreme paranoia of that, you know, not knowing who you can trust. And even ROM having this weapon that can, you know, it can filter out through his visor who's alien and who's not. That doesn't mean, you know, when he's telling people, no, that guy right next to you, he's really an alien. Like, they sort of have to take his word for it. So when there's this big metal alien, you know, killing people that look human, or that other humans have known all their lives, and he's going, no, trust me, they're bad aliens. Like, there is an extreme amount of paranoia and distrust, and just these underlying themes of, you know, how do you know who to trust and what people are like on the surface and what they're really like deep down. So it's, as much as this is a part of this Hasbro universe, like, it's really the dark, spooky, paranoid corner of that. You know, this isn't a bright and sunny comic,
man,
by any means. This is a... Sorry, go on.
You're giving me goosebumps right now, Chris. I'm just talking about the paranoid, because, again, that's something that was in the Marvel series. And so the fact that you're going to explore that in a new way, like when you first said the word paranoia, that purple cover with the eyes, that classic cover by, I think, Bill Sienkiewicz did it. And the tagline is Paranoia Strikes Deep.
Yeah.
So, I can't wait. I can't
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the whole thing, you know, like going back to stuff like Body Snatchers or anything else where, you know, the person you're seeing, or even the Americans, you know, when it explores the idea of the facade, you know, the person you're looking at on the outside, their exterior, their public persona is not at all who they really are deep down. And I mean, that's sort of the case with everybody at all times. You know, you never quite know, you know, what people are thinking. And I think that sort of paranoia has gotten exacerbated to a great degree now just because of the situations in the world. So it feels like having aliens as a means to explore that, you know, through sort of stylized science fiction is a, it's a fun way to go, but it also is very reflective of sort of the times that we're living in.
Yeah, and so the Free Comic Book Day issue has come out, and we saw the design of the Dire Wraiths there. Was that, how much input did David have on that? How did you come up with the idea for what the race, it's a very big departure from what we've seen in the past in the classic Marvel series. I loved that they were like all teeth.
Yeah, except those actually aren't the Dire Wraiths. That was a mutated human who was transformed, but we didn't want to go getting into the actual design or the look of the Dire Wraiths yet, at least as they exist on their world. So, yeah, I mean, David's been very active, and in fact, I just got the latest designs today. So we'll be seeing that type of mutated character again, like we saw in the Zero issue, but we didn't want to tip our hand on that just yet. But
so we haven't actually seen what the Dire Wraiths look like yet.
No, there's some hints in issue two, and there's some small appearances of them. But yeah, we're keeping that somewhat under wraps for now. But yeah, I really like that look David came up with. It was a fun, creepy. Just I love that giant mouth. It's a fun thing that we're going to end up using again. And Yeah, like I'm just excited to get this thing out into the world. Like, we'll probably see advanced copies of issue one here next week, which is just kind of a landmark for me that, like, this thing is now, like, there's about to be a printed copy of ROM for the first time in 30 years, and that thrills me to no end. And it's fun that I've been in touch with Michael Mantlow, who's Bill's brother, who's been the guy managing Bill's, you know, Bill's care for the last 20 some years. And so Michael's been really encouraging. He's, you know, he handed Bill a copy of ROM Zero. And, you know, I'm very mindful of the fact that those guys are the reason that I'm doing this. And so I want to do right by them. I want to do right by the fans. Like, there's a lot of different expectations I put on myself and a lot of pressure to not screw this up, but no more so than to try to do right by the guys that made this thing so important to me in the first place.
Yeah, that's true. And so just real quick, we should say that Bill Mantlow, who was a very prolific comic writer, was involved in a very terrible accident. And he does require care now. His brother, as you said, Michael, helps to care for him. And if you read any comics in the late 70s, early 80s at all, you probably read some Bill Mantlow stuff. I mean, he was a very prolific, really great guy by all accounts. And so if you'd like to contribute to his care, if you're a ROM fan, you're listening to this and you didn't know about that, or you want to get more information, if you go to Facebook and just do a search for the Bill Mantlow Project, there's a great Facebook page with a lot of information there. So
the ROM Zero issue we put out had an ad in the back that gives information on that, as does issue one. So yeah, I want to, you know, I'm trying to be as active as I can to help out there.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of you saw Guardians of the Galaxy, Rocket Raccoon, another Bill Mantlow creation.
And Cloak and Dagger creations of his are in development at you know, one of the cable channels. So yeah, he looms really large for anybody who read comics in the 80s. You know, he's the guy that made ROM more than just a toy. He made the Micronauts into what they were. Like, he did, like you said, he wrote every character Marvel put out back then.
Yeah, really, really great guy. Really a tragedy. Something you said about not showing us a Dire Race right off. I like that idea too, about just kind of having him as the shadowy, mysterious, you know, villain, so to speak, antagonist, I guess you'd say. And I want to know what they look like, but at the same time, the longer you can hold it off and the more suspense you can build on that, I feel like that would be something cool. Like you said, getting back to that Invasion of the Body Snatchers thing, you know, with like, man, what do they actually look like, and just building that suspense. Really cool idea.
Well, and even more than that, so as we come to find out, you know, ROM shows up on Earth thinking he's in hot pursuit of the Wraiths. We're going to find out the Wraiths have actually been here for far, far longer than should be possible. So they've well integrated into humanity at this point. So I mean, there's generations of Wraiths who very well could have, you know, assumed human form, bred with humans, and, you know, there could be generations of different versions of Wraiths out there in the world. So
oh, creepy.
Yeah, so as far as their actual look, like, their actual look probably might have changed based on how much human DNA there is going through some of them as well. So it's way more insidious than he expects.
Wow, that's crazy. Well, if one of our listeners is listening and learning about ROM for the first time, what you have heard so far hasn't piqued your interest enough to pick it up, what's going to be your quick like 30-second, 1-minute pitch? Someone, let's say, that comes up to the IDW booth at San Diego this year. I think the number one comes out that Wednesday, right?
Yes.
So what? How are you going to get someone that's not familiar with ROM to pick it up? What's going to be your little quick elevator pitch for it?
Oh, I'm just going to sit them down and play them this whole interview and go, man, listen to us two geek out about this thing. Like, it must be something. No, I mean, I think it's got a lot of what people like in superhero and action-packed comics, you know. But it's got a lot more than that. It's got a darker edge and a creepier edge and, you know, it sort of takes the very basic premise of an alien comes to Earth to save us from other aliens and takes it in very dark and hopefully unexpected ways. And it's, yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing where it's been a blast to build this universe around him and turn it into something. And I don't know. I'm hopefully just going to, you know, sit alongside Chris Gayle, David Messina. We'll all talk about what makes the book so special to us. And, you know, the Zero issue is funny. Some people read it and I wouldn't say let down, but they were just like, oh, well, we waited all this time and that's it. Like, yeah, but that was just 11 pages. Like, issue one is what I really want people to see, because we're doing an 24-page story in there that really, like, the ROM Zero was sort of a what you'd expect. ROM comes to Earth, you know, fights Dire Wraiths, and you get a sense of, okay, here's the mission. And now issue one is where you go, oh, man, this isn't at all what I thought it was going to be. It's not at all what ROM thought it was going to be, and it becomes something much bigger and different than that. And so that'll be the one that really, you know, tells people what this series is going to be like. So I'm hoping the Zero was, you know, the nice free taste that got them intrigued, and now issue one will be the thing that hopefully then, you know, cements them coming back for a long time.
Yeah, I heard that from a few people as well about the Zero issue, and my whole take on it was kind of think of that as like a teaser trailer where you just get some visuals. Maybe you get a sense of you know, one of the characters or two, but you really don't even know what it's all about yet. It's just to give you that first initial impression. And yeah, come back, try issue one, you know?
Yeah, and it's hard because it's kind of like Guns N' Roses going, and all right, man, we're putting out Chinese Democracy. We know we've made you wait this thing for 16 years. Like, it's going to suck even if it's great. So ROM's been a thing that, you know, we've been talking about for years and years, and people have heard about it for, you know, from their parents or what have you, and they've heard about it and not really even had a chance to read it for so many years that, like, it's almost doomed to be underwhelming in just an 11-page issue. But I hope you know, I hope it was enough to get people wanted to see what, you know, respect it for what it was, as a free teaser, like you say, and then the first issue is where we'll really try to do some things that you know, hook people. But yeah, 11 pages. I knew going into it that there was only so much we were going to do, and that there was a certain amount of people that were going to go, yeah, we waited an awful long time for 11 pages.
Yeah, I think longtime fans of ROM, some of them I've talked to, they're definitely in on the series. I think they're just as intrigued as I, and hopefully we'll pick up a lot of new readers along the way. I'm certainly going to be talking about it on the Comic Source podcast. So,
well, that's why we're doing this big event in September too, this Revolution, which brings ROM and the Transformers and Micronauts and G.I. Joe and then the creation of Mask all into one universe. Well, they're already in the same universe, but this will make that apparent. And then again, like, I've seen some hesitation from people that go, well, I don't want you to wreck my comic. Like, if what I like is ROM, what I like is Transformers, I don't suddenly want G.I. Joe being thrown at me every month too, or Mask or what have you. And so, you know, that event is designed to make it clear that these characters all exist with one another, but ROM is still going to be the ROM comic, and it's not going to be where there's Transformers running around every month and it changes the tone and you know, and thrust of the series. But it's just sort of like the Marvel Universe. You can have an Iron Man comic, and every now and then, if he meets up with Spider-Man or Captain America, great. And if he doesn't, you know, that his adventures carry on. So, you know, hopefully people won't be trepidation about that, because that's giving us a universe to play with that we didn't have, and it's not going to alter the long-term direction that we have for this book.
Yeah, of course. You know, and you can, the same can be said about the classic ROM series. You know, it technically existed in the regular Marvel universe, but you rarely saw, you know, Spider-Man or Captain America or those guys show up. It did eventually happen, but it's okay. It can exist on its own in the universe. Don't worry that just because, you know, if you're crossing over with G.I. Joe or Transformers, that Snake Eyes and ROM are going to, you know, team up going forward every issue or something like
that. Yeah. I mean, and I get it. Like, I get people going, oh, man, everything's a shared universe now. And then even for me, like, ROM kind of went off the rails, like, about a year after you got involved. You know, once the Ditko era started, and it was just this giant war, you know, it sort of lost a bit of what made it so good at the start.
Right.
So again, like, I've got all that in my head. Like, I've seen a lot of things go off the rails, and I'm wary of that. And so at least knowing that going in, I can take every possible step to make sure that we don't do that.
Oh, fair enough. Well, I really want to thank you for your time, Chris. I know you're super busy over there running things at IDW. Is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know?
No, just that. Just that ROM is something, like, yeah, hopefully people can hear how excited I am about it. And I would love everybody's thoughts on issue one, like new or old readers, you know, just to hear if it feels like we're off in the right direction. And, you know, I also want to do like the old school letters page, like just make this thing a fun, you know, a fun alternative for people every month.
Yeah, it sounds good to me. I think that there's enough of us old school ROM fans out there that we can have a really great community and you know, welcome the new readers in and share our thoughts together on share our thoughts and excitement about ROM going forward.
Absolutely, yeah. So yeah, man, good talking to you, and hopefully we'll talk more at the con.
Yeah, definitely. We'll definitely have to set that up. So once again, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. Please visit thecomicsourceblog.com for past episodes of the podcast. You can watch episodes of our YouTube channel there. Manny has his written blog there, my written blog. We have our sketch gallery. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. That's probably the best place to find out when new episodes are released and what conventions we're going to be attending and such. You can also do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram and keep up to date on all the new episodes and the convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank my special guest, Chris Ryle, and make sure you are all out there pre-ordering ROM number one. You don't want to miss out. Maybe your LCS doesn't order a lot of independent books, or they're not sure about ROM. The best way you can ensure that you get issue one is to let them know ahead of time that you want it and pre-order it. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.